Hi, this is Rachel in Recovery. We're back with Ashley Chung, and she's going to tell the rest of her story.
How has this impacted your, or how has this affected your parenting?
Well, I am not a biological parent yet. We are now in the process of adopting twin boys. They are 10 years old, and we've had them now for about 6 months. And actually, we've surprised ourselves. We think that we are doing an amazing job parenting, or at least, I know that sounds cocky, but we are instilling such good traits in these boys already. Because since we're adopting, clearly they're also victims of trauma. Not the same trauma, but trauma nonetheless. And these kids, they have such distinct problems, and they're polar opposite problems, and they and it clashes. And so how my husband and I have handled it with and with what I've gone through and what he's gone through is we are instilling confidence in them. We're making them confident in themselves, so when they do feel bullied at school, they don't have to feel small. For I'll use this example. One of my kids, he's the more insecure one, and he's the least athletic one, and he has found an interest in cooking with me. So I let him cook with me. And when I say I let him cook, I mean, I let him do it. I just stand there and I tell him what to do because I want him to gain that independence of being able to do it himself and that confidence. And even if he makes mistakes, like let him make those mistakes as, and he'll learn as he goes, you know, perfecting his own craft. So I taught him, the very first thing I taught him how to make was chicken and rice, but we make it different. We put it in after we season it and cook it, we put it in the pressure cooker with a bunch of seasonings and make the rice really creamy. But anyway, I showed him how to make that, and just guiding him, I just stood there. I didn't touch anything. I just said, now do this, put this here and put that there. And, you know, sprinkle this on what you think is a generous amount or good enough. You don't want to over season, but you know, if you under season, that's okay. You can always add, right? And at the end, the meal was delicious and he ate it and he loved it, and his brother loved it. And that boosted his confidence because his brother's hyping him up and I'm hyping him up. He's hyping himself up. So then he goes to school. And he, this whole time when we first met him, he said he just wanted to be a cop, right? It was just, you know, typical child career choice. I want to be a cop, right? So now, after he's cooked with me, now he's telling his classmates he wants to be a chef. And he told me his class laughed at him. And the confidence we have instilled in him, he was like, I don't care if you're laughing or not. At least I'm eating good. And I feel like that just speaks volumes on what we are doing for these kids and our parenting skills, that we are making them confident enough that they don't have to fall under the pressures of their classmates. They, like, if anyone makes them tries to make them feel small, whatever, they know what they're doing. They know that they're good at it, you know, and they also look at us because we are so young. We're a younger couple, 25 and 26. We're young enough for them to kind of look at us and be like, yeah, I want a life like you guys, because we built a great life for ourselves from scratch. So I think that's translated into really good parenting skills for these kids, and I have high hopes for them growing into teenagehood.
Okay. Well, it sounds like you guys are doing really well with that. How has this impacted your finances?
Well, it was bad at first. Part of my coping, and this has less to do with this child sex abuse and more to do with, I mean, it does boil down from it. My biological father, he did not work. He pretended to work growing up, saying he worked for the FBI, the CIA, the Bush administration. He worked for these celebrities like Mary-Kate and Ashley Olsen and Raven Simone when they were children. Which now red flag when they were children, girls, like, how did I not put that together? But anyway, he didn't work and he made my mom work, and my mom was a Chinese immigrant. So at the time, you know, she worked at the Chinese restaurant with our family, like you, most Chinese people that you see, not most, but like some Chinese people that you see that are first generation. And she worked all the time to make up for where he lacked. And because of that, I went without a lot. I didn't even really have toys. My mom was a seamstress on the side just as a hobby to make me clothes instead of have to buy me clothes. So I would use her little thread spools. I don't know what they're called, but you know, the little spools of thread. And I would pretend those were people, and I'd get Tupperware and pretend those were school buses, and I'd get old shoe boxes and I'd tape them up and pretend those were like Barbie houses. And that was how I played Barbies. And I also went without a lot of clothes. And because I'm naturally very small growing up, I remember I was wearing clothes from the fourth grade in like the ninth grade. And that was embarrassing because I was forced to go to a public school. I just wasn't allowed to have friends. So I wasn't allowed to like participate in parties or holiday themed anything. Like I was isolated, but put in the public. So it was very hard for me to adjust and accept that. So once I got my own money as an adult, I spent every penny on clothes and toys and not literal toys, but, you know, adult toys, gadgets and stuff. I blew all my money on everything I couldn't have growing up because now I had full control. And I met my husband when I was 19 years old. So, you know, I was still young and still through that phase. And I still shopped a lot, even in our early relationship. And it wasn't until recently that I've got a hold of myself and it's like, Ashley, like, be smart with your money. Like, this isn't a trauma response anymore. You're not in danger of going without. You're in full control for the rest of your life. So now I've gotten a better handle on my finances. We've got like four different retirement accounts, different stocks, different, you know, Roth IRAs, and we're doing a lot better with our finances. But my trauma was a result of poor financial choices to begin with.
Okay. How has this impacted your overall long-term health?
Well, I don't know if I've health issues, and when you look at me, you wouldn't think so. I'm 110 pound, 5'2", Asian, you know, Asian American, and from the looks of me, I should be perfectly healthy. But when I was 20 years old, I fell into septic shock, which we still don't know why. But a month after septic shock, I had a heart attack. So at the age of 20, I had my very first heart attack and basically an onset of health problems since then. And I don't know if my mental health has anything to do with it or not. I would say that it probably wouldn't have happened as soon, I would think, you know, logically speaking, but there's no way to really guarantee, you know, your physical being can't, there's no test to verify that your physical body is reacting to a mental reason, right? Other than typical like anxiety and stuff. So
actually there is. Like they have like, I mean, it's more of a survey, but it's called the ACE score. And so they track all your childhood trauma. And depending on your score, it dictates, like, you're more likely for XYZ. And it's everything from heart issues to cancer to all of these things. And I recommend reading The Body Keeps the Score if that's not on your reading list already.
Oh, wow. I had no idea. Thank you. Yeah, absolutely. I'll read that. And I'll also take that survey because that I had no idea that something like that existed.
Yes. It does. It's an indicator, but yes, I mean, there's a huge correlation to a high ACE score and like your body just giving out on you.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of that. And right now I actually have a cardiology appointment scheduled for next Friday because in my current life right now, I have had to help my mom file for divorce from him. Finally, it's been a healing journey for her too. So her divorce is April 25th. Woohoo! But I have been dealing with that because she's Chinese. So I had to deal with all of it for her because she struggled to understand how to deal with law and lawyers and stuff. So that's something that's been on my plate. I'm having to deal with that for her. But then also his reaction to the divorce was so nasty and so negative. You know, listing that, you know, he cannot allow her a divorce as it's against his religious beliefs. And he calls himself a sovereign citizen, acts like he's a stateless person, that no rules of the world applies to him anymore. Like, it's literally crazy. But he obviously is very vindictive, very malicious still, instead of remorseful and taking accountability and responsibility for what he's done, he's still acting like he's the victim. And so once that realization hit me, I was like, I have to press my own charges, because if he gets out, he's going to come after us because he won't even acknowledge what he's done wrong. So that is something that I have been presently dealing with. And in turn, in the last couple of months, I have been fainting a lot, passing out completely. Like, it started once, like, a while, and then it started once a week and multiple times a day, and it just, it's been pretty bad. And so I don't know if this has anything to do with what's going on, but I would think that it might.
I would say it most definitely does. I would recommend talking to your primary physician and kind of going from there on that.
The cardiology appointments next week. I'm sure they're going to slap a monitor on me, and I'm sure it'll be fine. It always is. I'm young.
Well, I mean, and I would also tell my cardiologist, hey, this is what's going on emotionally, because that does help them identify things better.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I definitely, that is always usually how I address things, because I like to believe my physical body isn't giving me as much problems as my mental. So I always start with, you know, I don't know if this is any real problem. I'll tell you right now, I've got a lot of stuff going on. And usually we'll go from there. They'll run their tests and we'll see what happens.
How has this impacted your social life?
So it's kind of a mix. At first, so before I spoke my truth, right, I was considered a social butterfly. But again, like I mentioned in the beginning, I was a very toxic person. So I was very social, but very toxic. So I had a lot of friends, but not very healthy friendships. As I got older, as I started to accept my truth, tell my truth to myself and to other people, it created a different form of anxiety where I started to want to remove myself from everybody and isolate myself from everybody, because one, I didn't want to spread all of my negativity or all of my problems onto people. And I have a form of social anxiety that I feel uncomfortable in silence. So if there's any moment where I feel there's silence or there's nothing else to talk about, I continue to talk. And I don't like that. I don't like being the center of attention. And so with my social anxiety presenting itself in the form of talking, but my actual self knowing I don't like to do that, I just found it best to just cut myself out of those situations to begin with and not be around people. Then it got to a point where it was very unhealthy. Then my only friend was my husband. Since I've garnered confidence, and that's started a whole new chapter for me. I have started to redevelop my friendships and my relationships with people. And one thing that I try to do is, what if I'm thinking about someone, if they just cross my mind in a good way, I text them. I send them a text, or depending on who they are in relation to me, I'll call them, send them a text. Hey, I'm thinking about you. Just wanted to let you know. I hope you're doing well. And that's done really well for me since I've done that. I've been able to maintain some really healthy relationships and friendships. Not too many strings attached. I don't feel any obligation to overshare, but I feel like I've been able to garner some really healthy relationships since I've been able to start doing that.
Okay. How has this affected your long-term mental health?
Well, if you would have asked me 6 months ago, I would have had a different answer than I do today. Today, I think that my mental health journey has been a road of up and down, like everyone's. It's a rocky, hilly, you know, journey. And for me, at this point, now that I've mastered confidence, I can only see that it's uphill from here. I don't think there is going to be another down. There might be like dips, but there's not going to be a huge downward slope anymore. Before it'd be, you know, I'd go up, but then I'd go down just as far and I'd start back on square one. Now it's like, I'm going to go up, 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 and I might go down a little bit, but I'm not going back down to the bottom. I might be down, let myself feel that, let myself go through that, and then time to go back up. And so speaking in long term, I'm only 25 now. I have no idea how I will be when I'm 40. But with the way that I've trained my brain, I'm confident that I will still be a better version of myself because I want to be.
That's a good place to be. To other victims out there, what advice would you want to give them?
Out of everything that I've learned with myself, and I know I've said this a few times already, the number one thing you want to try to master is confidence. And the best way that really made it stick for me was positive affirmations. Even if you don't believe it, I tell myself, get comfortable being uncomfortable. It is so uncomfortable to tell yourself things that you don't believe. Like, I am beautiful. I will succeed. I am going to win. I am a good daughter. I would tell myself those things repetitively. And if I was in a moment of weakness, if I was feeling like at fault for any reason or victim blaming myself, I'd start back on those affirmations. I am enough. I am going to win. I am going to succeed. I will be okay. I am beautiful, over and over and over, whether I believed it or not, until eventually it stuck. And then now I really feel like there's nothing that could bring me down. And so for anyone that's going through what I went through, or even just any mental health insecurities at all, just positive affirmations go a long way.
Yes, I would definitely agree on that. What was the grooming process for you?
When you say grooming, do you mean for what he did?
Yeah, if you feel comfortable talking about that.
Oh, yeah, no, I do. I just wanted to make sure I understood. It was really diabolical, man. Now that I'm smart enough to look back objectively and reflect and see how he would think, because I really dived into a whole bunch of psychological books and tried to understand people who think like he does. And now looking at it objectively, I was able to see he preyed on my mother. My mother, like I said, was a Chinese immigrant. She came to America after 20 years. She was 20 years old, waited 15 years for citizenship. So, and she had to drop out of school in fifth grade to work on the farm. Like, it literally was a whole nother world over there when she came to America. And so she didn't even know English. She had to learn English in her 20s when she came here. And he preyed on her. And obviously, I can't answer why he preyed on her other than using deductive reasoning based off of, you know, she's beautiful. She was young. She was naive. She was uneducated. He had a pseudo intellectual. So he surrounded himself by people he thought was dumber than him and would act and carry himself like he was super smart. Like I said, he pretended he worked for the FBI, the CIA, and all this stuff. Like he carried this armor of pseudo intellect and preyed on my mom for the lack of, and saw how hard of a worker she was. Knowing Chinese immigrants, they work hard, especially immigrants in general. When they come to America, that's the whole point, is they want to work hard to build a better life for their future children. So he preyed on her because of that. And then once they had me, then once I'm in the picture. So she was in a, I call them a cult. Some people don't. I do because of my personal experience with them. They try to manipulate people, or I won't use the term manipulate for the people that are in this group of people, but they basically use fear tactic. They tell you that if you don't believe what they believe, then you will die. And that's my mom. She's grabbed onto that fear tactic. She's scared to die. So now she's full force what they believe. And he met her through that group. But then once, for as long as I can remember, he never went to the church goings. So he, part of the grooming process was he would force me to go. He was in my ear constantly, you know, oh, she doesn't love you. Oh, this, that, and the other. She's doing this because she doesn't love you. And then forcing me to go with her because she didn't love me is how he'd phrase it. Oh, you know, I don't want to hear her yell at me, or I don't want to hear her complain. So you just go. I don't want to deal with it. But remember, she's doing this because she doesn't love you. And which made me grow resentful towards her, which made me, you know, just that much more rebellious against her, give her that much more of a harder time, make me want to go home more and be with him more. And he gets to stay home and just relish in it. And that really was like the main part of the grooming, was putting me against her as much as he could. So then when he wasn't working and she was, I'm home alone with him, he's grooming me even more that he's my only best friend. Because in this religious group, they look at anyone outside of the religious group as worldly people. Worldly people are tainted people. You can't associate with them. Outside association spoils useful habits is what they always quoted to me. And I'm an only child, so I'm at home, no friends, no family to play with, just me and him. And that was what he did. That was his plan, and he went through with it for over 10 years. It started as early as about 4 or 5 years old, all the way up until I was in my late teenager, or early teenagers. It just gradually stopped. But because I was raised to believe that it was okay, I was raised to believe that it was an act of a father showing his daughter love, I didn't think anything of it. I didn't question it. So once it gradually stopped, once I started getting into high school, I didn't think anything of it. But I remember he had a talk with me. He sat me in his truck before, like, I think it was like freshman year, the summer of freshman year of high school, saying that, you know, giving his version of the sex talk was that I have permission to go down on guys and they have permission to go down on me, but there will be no penetration. Otherwise, he'll know about it and I'll be in trouble. And again, back then, didn't know how to think of it. I remember feeling a bit uncomfortable, like, okay, like, I don't want to talk about this, but he was persistent on talking about it with me. So that, you know, from that point, I almost was creeped out by my dad. But then it's like, he was my best friend for so long. He did this and that for me for so long. I can't be like this. I'm betraying him if I feel like this, right? So there was another thing he said to me too that really, like, was further manipulation to me. And I don't know if he was blowing smoke up my ass or not, but he's saying that he can smell when girls are on their period or when they're horny. And we would be going through a grocery store and he'd be like, oh, that girl right there, she's on her period. Teenage girls that he's pointing out. Oh, that girl right there, oh, she's horny. Oh, she wants some. And I remember I would feel so embarrassed that, one, if anyone could hear him, and two, what about me? You know, oh my God, how many people can smell me all the time? And that's like, oh my gosh, that was so hard for me to get over, to realize that that's not true. I didn't even learn that that wasn't true until I was like in my 20s. And so, yeah, he was very diabolical in his grooming process. And now it's like, I see it plain as day. I can't believe I didn't see it before, but I can't be hard on my younger self because that's all I knew, you know?
Well, and the way he was able to get away with it for so long, I feel like, is because he isolated you. I think isolation, I mean, that takes havoc on the brain. Last question. How has this impacted your faith?
So, just like the rest of my entire healing process, it was also a rocky journey. Part of his manipulation was to put me in this religious group. And so, after I was in foster care, I went into foster care at 16. And basically, up until I was about 21. So between 16 and 21, I spit on the name of God and Jesus. I didn't believe it. Jesus wasn't real. I believed in the universe, believed in anything other than Jesus. Jesus was not real to me. It was partially like between, you know, how could a God exist if this was happening to me in the name of God, right? And so I just was just very spiteful, and I had no faith whatsoever. And then I met a girl, her name was Laura. For her privacy, I won't give her full name, but her name was Laura, and she was exactly what I needed to open my eyes up to realize that other people's interpretation of Jesus and of God and of faith, or how other people use it, has no reflection on him himself. That, you know, there are a lot of people that use the name of God and Jesus for evil things. And so it's important to build your own relationship. Basically, it made me realize that, not that it's a person, but you kind of have to look at it like a person, right? So you can get a bunch of hearsay, like a celebrity, for instance. You know, you can read all these news articles. You can read a book that they've written and all of this stuff. I personally never fully read the Bible yet, which I'm studying right now. But at that time, you know, uneducated, yeah, it's a bunch of hearsay, right? So a reputation can be trashed by people. And that's kind of how it was for me. And so I realized that I need to garner my own relationship and learn for myself who God is and who Jesus is, and ignore everyone else, that there was no expectation that I have to listen to other people. I have to learn from other people, because in the end, we're all human. And so once I learned that, and I started to do my own studying and started my own relationship and prayer, and that's when it changed. And now I have found my faith, and I do trust in Jesus and love Jesus, and I understand differently than I did when I was younger. And so now I think my faith just strengthens my journey, because I believe this is the path that I was led to be on. Everything that a lot of things I would hope to go one way, but turns out to be another way. But however it's always turned out, I've always found myself blessed in the end. So I trust now that I am on a path, and I'm on the right path. And if the path goes a way that I don't expect it, trust that it's going to end up the right way. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Well, is there anything else you'd like to add, Ashley?
No, I think I've kind of covered most of it. This is my first round of doing something like this, so maybe in the next go I'll have more. But for right now, no, thank you so much for having me and letting me share what I went through and how I dealt with it.
Okay. All right, guys, thanks for listening, and I hope that Ashley will be back sometime in the near future. This is going to be on your favorite podcast, so listen to us on there. We're on every Thursday at 10 a.m. And always follow us on social media. And if you're looking to come on the show, feel free to reach out either on social media or on rachelandrecovery.com. And if you want to support us, you can go to Patreon, and we've got some t-shirts and memberships for all kinds of cool gifts out there for those who are members of the Patreon and support us. All right, guys, thanks for listening. See you next Thursday. You're my home. Oh, 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 oh. Oh, oh, oh.